Let's take a closer look now at former President Trump's legal team and its strategy with Washington Post reporter Rosalind Helderman. Hey, Roz.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. So the former president's legal team now includes attorney David Schoen and Bruce Castor Jr. Let's start with Schoen. What should people know about him?
Sure. Well, neither of these figures are well-known people in the legal community. Neither of them are known to be serious constitutional scholars, but both of them have spent quite a bit of time in a courtroom. David Schoen is an Atlanta-based lawyer. He's a criminal defense attorney. He has bragged about the number of sort of big-name mobsters that he has represented in the past. He had this somewhat well-known, because he talks about it a lot, meeting with Jeffrey Epstein at the Manhattan jail days before Mr. Epstein took his own life when he was under a federal indictment. So he's a guy who spent time in a courtroom. And, you know, when you're arguing a case, that could be helpful in the coming days.
And what about Bruce Castor Jr.? We know that he's the cousin of Steve Castor, so the last name may be familiar. Steve Castor was the House Minority Counsel who defended then-President Trump during the first impeachment trial. But tell us more about Bruce Castor Jr.
Sure. Bruce Castor might be familiar to some people in Pennsylvania. He was a fairly well-known local prosecutor in Pennsylvania. He was a district attorney, the kind of district attorney who got a lot of local news coverage, was on TV quite a bit for the cases he was handling, known as a big personality, but also known probably the thing he is best known for is that as district attorney, he made a decision not to prosecute the comedian and actor Bill Cosby when allegations of sexual misconduct began to emerge about him. Mr. Cosby, of course, was later prosecuted essentially by one of Bruce Castor's successors and is now serving a prison sentence.
I see. And so Castor and Schoen are coming in after the departure of the former president's original defense team. And Roz, you report that had to do with the legal argument that Trump was pushing for. He wanted to emphasize his false claim of election fraud. Can you explain what happened there?
Sure. He had had this team of five sort of low-key, fairly locally well-respected lawyers from South Carolina who he had located through Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator. Our understanding is there was something of a falling out about legal strategy because it was very important to the president to press, to continue to press in this trial, his false argument that the election was stolen from him. Now, I will say that that has been denied by some people in the president's camp, although that's what our reporting shows. Both of his new attorneys, Schoen and Castor, have said that they do not intend for his arguments about the election to be a central part of what they argue. What they have said in their legal briefs so far is simply that his arguments on that point are protected by the First Amendment. They did have some convoluted language essentially arguing that you can't prove his claims were false, and hence he should have been allowed to make them.
Well, so there's the First Amendment argument, and then there's also the question of whether the trial is constitutional in the first place. And I'm curious about that point, Ross, because, I mean, Trump insists that he won the election, but one of the key defenses of this revamped legal team appears to be that he lost the election and therefore can't be put on trial because he's no longer president. So based on your reporting, how does Trump feel about this argument, which is kind of a concession?
Yeah, it's an interesting central conundrum. You know, when they first filed their first legal document last week, I noticed that nowhere in the document did they refer to Donald Trump as being the former president, even though their entire legal argument is predicated on the idea that you cannot try a former president. Instead, they referred to him throughout as the 45th president, I guess to distinguish him from Joe Biden, who is the 46th president. That said, they filed a brief earlier this week where they did use the language former president. I think they have sort of settled amongst them that because this is their core argument, they're going to have to acknowledge that he isn't now at this point no longer president of the United States.
And Roz, we know that Democrats are going to fixate on what then-President Trump told his supporters on the day of the insurrection. He said, if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. How is Trump's defense team going to explain that and defend that?
Yeah, they're going to want to talk very exclusively about the speech that he made that day. They're going to look closely at the language. They're going to look at that fight language and say essentially that that's common political rhetoric. They're going to cite instances in which Democrats have used that kind of language as well. The Democrats are going to argue, look at the whole course of conduct. You have to look at that speech in context. It was inciting to the crowd.
I see. So taking a narrow view there and maybe a little bit of whataboutism as well. Roslyn Helderman, reporter for The Washington Post, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.